Today we were discussing about the mind and Krishna's reply on what to do about the wayward mind that causes vision different from reality. And the conclusion is that the mind must be controlled. And without controlling the mind, if the mind remains unbridled, it is very difficult to advance. But if one controls one's mind and focuses it properly on the appropriate path, success is guaranteed, Krishna says. That is my opinion. Now Arjuna asks a very heavy question. He says, Arjuna Uvatsa, Arjuna says, Ayati. Ayati is a renunciant. Ayati is one who is unsuccessful in his transcending. Ayati sadayopeto. Sadayopeto, that he's engaged with faith, but he's unsuccessful. Yoga salita manasa. He's engaged with faith, but salita means he's deviated, he's moved from his yoga. Yoga, Prabhupada translated here, is from the mystic link, manasa. So he has such a mind that it has become deviated. This unsuccessful yogi, his mind has become deviated from the link of yoga. And aprapya, yoga samsiddhi. Yoga samsiddhi means the highest perfection of yoga, and aprapya means what? Cannot obtain. He doesn't obtain due to the deviation of his mind because of him falling from the link. He's become disconnected. But he has faith, but he fails to attain the highest connection. And then so yoga samsadim, he's aprapya, he doesn't get that. And kam gatim, what destination? Krishna gachati. What does he get? He doesn't get the highest destination. He has faith, he's tried for the highest thing, but he doesn't attain that. What happens to such a person? So here's the translation. Arjuna said, O Krishna, what is the destination of the unsuccessful transcendentalist who in the beginning takes to the process of self-realization with faith, but who later desists due to worldly mindedness and thus does not attain perfection in mysticism? What happens to him? Is he born in Kenya? Where there's enough bananas, etc.
A banker's son in Kenya.
A banker's
son. Not a banana.
Yeah. And then he asks further about the same question. Almighty Om Krishna, does not such a man who is bewildered from the path of transcendence, fall away from both spiritual and material success, and perish like a riven cloud, like a cloud that is, there's a big, big cloud, and when a small cloud breaks away by the wind, by the force of the wind, the small cloud breaks away from the bigger cloud, gradually he just dissipates, he just turns into nothing. So Arjuna is asking, is this what happens to such a person? He's no longer with the big cloud and he dissipates in the little cloud, and what does he gain? Does he perish like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? He's neither a materialist because he has faith, and he's not a transcendentalist because aprapya yogasam sadim, he doesn't attain. So what happens to such a person? Does he not just, he has nowhere to be, neither in the material realm or the spiritual realm? So we'll read from Prabhupada's purport. Arjuna's question is, he has no position. He's like a riven cloud. A cloud in the sky sometimes deviates from a small cloud and joins a big one. But if he cannot join a big one, then he is blown away by the wind and becomes a non-entity in the vast sky. The Brahmanapati is the path of transcendental realization through knowing oneself to be spiritual essence, part and parcel of Krishna, of the Supreme Lord, who is manifest as Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. So Sri Krishna is the fullest manifestation of the Supreme Absolute Truth. And therefore, one who is surrendered to the Supreme Person is a successful transcendentalist. To reach this goal of life through Brahman and Paramatma realization takes many, many births. Therefore, the supermost path of transcendental realization is Bhakti Yoga, Krishna consciousness, the direct method. The Prabhupada addresses this point a little more in the beginning of the purport. There are two ways to progress. Those who are materialists have no interest in transcendence. Therefore, they are more interested in material advancement by economic development or in promotion to the higher planets by appropriate work. When one takes to the path of transcendence, so there's two sides. One is the materialist, and then there's the transcendentalist. And one takes to the path of transcendence, one has to stop all material activities and sacrifice all forms of so-called material happiness. So one very determined, I'm going to do that. But if the aspiring transcendentalist fails, then he apparently loses both ways. In other words, he can enjoy neither material happiness nor spiritual success. He has no position. He is like a riven cloud. So that's what Arjuna is asking. And then the third verse, which is his question, is the 39th verse. This is my doubt, O Krishna, and I ask you to dispel it completely. And remember, this has come after Krishna has described the importance of yoga and the importance of controlling one's mind, and after, which is basically what Prabhupada said, that one has to completely stop. If one wants to be successful, one has to completely stop all engagements of material activities. One has to be completely focused on the goal. So then Arjuna's question is very practical. What happens if I don't make it, if someone doesn't succeed? And only you, no one else who is found, who can destroy this doubt. That's Krishna. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Because previously Krishna has explained what the future of the successful transcendentalist is, how he attains. He explained that earlier. He's always with Krishna. He always remains within Krishna. He's always with Krishna in every circumstance, regardless of what's happening. He attains, he's with Krishna. He's free from all reactions to past deeds. He achieves the highest stage of perfect happiness, adyanta sukhamasnute. So that's what happens to the successful transcendentalist. And now he's asking about the unsuccessful transcendentalist. So Prabhupada's purport explains that Krishna is the greatest knower. He knows everything. So therefore, the verdict of Krishna is the final and complete answer to all doubts, because he knows past, present, and future perfectly, but no one knows him. Krishna and Krishna conscious devotees alone can know what is what. So So now Krishna is going to begin his reply in text 40, and his reply basically goes to the end of the chapter in text 47. So that's 8 verses. So, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, says, "Son of Prita, a transcendentalist engaged in kalyana krit kaschid, nahi kalyana krit kaschid, durgatim tatagacchati." So, nahi kalyana krit kaschid, durgatim tatagacchati. One who is engaged in auspicious, kalyana krit, doing auspicious things, nahi, he never, durgatim, he never is degraded. He never goes down. He doesn't lose. He doesn't go down. Tatagacchati. Nahi kalyana krit kaschid durgatim. He never goes down. One is engaged in auspiciousness. Interestingly, Prabhupada will say in his purport, this is true. Even if the auspiciousness isn't the highest auspiciousness of Krishna consciousness, if one engages in good activities, that will always cause elevation for him. So here is the translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Son of Prita, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction either in this world or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil." So we'll read from Prabhupada's purport here. It's a long purport, we won't read it all. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, fifth chapter, 17th text, where Narada Muni is instructing Vyasadeva, he instructs Vyasadeva as follows: "Chakrasvadamam charam bhujam hari bhujan apakwa atapate tato yadi yatra kwa vabhadram abhud amusyakim ko varta apto abhajatam svadamata." If someone gives up all material prospects and takes complete shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no loss or degradation in any way. On the other hand, a non-devotee may fully engage in his occupational duties and yet not gain anything. For material prospects, there are many activities, both scriptural and customary. A transcendentalist is supposed to give up all material activities for the sake of spiritual advancement in life, Krishna consciousness. One may argue that by Krishna consciousness, one may attain the highest perfection if it is completed, but if one does not attain such a perfectional stage, then he loses both materially and spiritually. It is enjoined in the scriptures that one has to suffer the reactions for not executing prescribed duties. Therefore, one who fails to discharge transcendental activities properly becomes subject to these reactions. The Bhagavatam assures the unsuccessful transcendentalist there be no need of worries. Did you say no worries? It's bona fide. And the Bhagavatam assures. Well, it doesn't assure everyone, but even the unsuccessful transcendentalist. Even though he may be subjected to the reaction for not perfectly executing prescribed duties, he is still not a loser, because auspicious Krishna consciousness is never forgotten. And one so engaged will continue to be so even if he is lowborn in the next life. On the other hand, one who simply follows the prescribed duties need not necessarily attain auspicious results if he is lacking Krishna consciousness. So there may be some reactions that one gets if one acts improperly, but the essence of one's spiritual existence will remain. And one will pick up from where one left off. So what is Krishna consciousness? What's the verse? I don't remember it properly. A little Trayate Mahato.
Abhi Karma Neshasti Pratyavana Vijate Svopamapya Siddhamsi Tam Trayate Mahato Vaya.
Yeah. That if one acts properly, one does the right thing, then that gain is eternal. It is never lost. So Krishna says this again here. Same point he has made in the second chapter. So one may have to get some, by Krishna's arrangement, be in a somewhat a difficult situation, but the Krishna conscious part, it's one's forever. Well, if one gains something on the material level, it must be lost by the force of time. If one gains something on the spiritual level, it is never lost by the force of time. So therein is a major difference. Krishna is going to explain more about this, how it isn't lost, and what happens to such a person. He's going to explain it in the next several texts. Prapya punya kritam lokam usitva sasvati sama sujinam simatam gehe yoga brasta vijayate. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, punya loka. Punya kritam lokam. After dwelling, usitva shashvati sama, after dwelling for many, many years on the pious planets where there's so much enjoyment. So that's the result of his unsuccess, is elevation materially. Then after that, after he's finished with that material elevation, he is born into a family of righteous people or into the family of rich aristocracy. So this is, as Prabhupada will explain in the purport here, there's two classes of yogis. One who fold have difficulty after a little bit of progress, and then there are those who have difficulty after a great amount of progress, because that can also happen. So this verse describes the result that comes to someone after a little progress. First he goes to the very, very high planets where there is very fine enjoyment, and then he takes his birth in a suitable family of righteous persons. Suchinam shimatam geyi. Suchinam means the pious and prosperous. He takes his birth gehe in the house of the pious and the prosperous. Yoga brashta abhijayate. One who has fallen from the path of yoga, that's where he'll take his birth after enjoying on the heavenly planets. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The unsuccessful yogis are divided into two classes. One has fallen after very little progress, and one has fallen after long practice of yoga. So which are you? The yogi who falls after a short period of practice goes to the higher planets, where pious living entities are allowed to enter. After prolonged life there, one is sent back to this planet to take birth in the family of righteous Brahmana Vaishnavas, or of aristocratic merchants. The real purpose of yoga practice is to achieve the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, as explained in the last verse of this chapter. But those who do not persevere to such an extent, and who fail because of material allurement, are allowed by the grace of the Lord to make full utilization of their material propensities. And after that, they are given opportunities to live prosperous lives in righteous or aristocratic families. Those who are born in such families may take advantage of the facilities and try to elevate themselves to full Krishna consciousness. So that's after a little practice. And what happens to someone after a long practice? That's the next verse. Atava yogina meva kule bhavati bhimatam etadhi dolabhataram loke janma yad idrisham. Bhimatam means those who have great wisdom. So such ata yoginam, these yogis, after a long practice, they certainly, kule bhavati dhimatam, they take their birth in the family of those who have great wisdom, dhimatam. Etad hi dulabhataram. This type of a birth is dulabha, very, very rare. The taram at the end means dulabhataram, means it's extremely rare, the topmost of rarity. Loke janma yad idrisam. In this world, it is very rare to take a birth like this in the family of learned, wise transcendentalists. So Prabhupada's translation. Or if unsuccessful after long practice of yoga, he takes his birth in the family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. So Prabhupada's purport is interesting. Birth in a family of yogis or transcendentalists, those with great wisdom, is praised herein because the child born in such a family receives a spiritual impetus from the very beginning of his life. It is especially the case in the Acharya or Goswami families. Such families are very learned and devoted by tradition and training, and thus they become spiritual masters. In India, there are many such Acharya families, but they have now degraded due to insufficient education and training. By the grace of the Lord, there are still families that foster transcendentalists generation after generation, that everyone born in that family, and they become very devotionally inclined. It is certainly very fortunate to take birth in such families. Fortunately, both our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada is Om Vishnupad, Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, and our humble self had the opportunity to take birth in such families. By the grace of the Lord, and both of us were trained in the devotional service of the Lord from the very beginning of our life. Later on, we met by the order of the transcendental system. Boom. Because it just happens by Krishna's arrangement when one has these tendencies, one gets some training and then by Krishna's arrangement connected directly through Guru Parampara. So this is Krishna's arrangement and the power of one's sanskaras, or the impression that one is carrying from one's previous life. So after taking such a birth, this is description in 43, what happens next. On taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life. And he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Guru. So the light goes on, so to speak, in his consciousness. And he says, yes, this is what I want. He's attracted. So this explains why certain people, certain souls, are immediately attracted, and certain people are attracted after a shorter time, and certain a longer time, and certain people, they can't understand what Krishna consciousness or any spiritual or religious activity is about. It doesn't connect to them. They don't connect to it. And other people, immediately they understand. Prabhupada says in the he gives the example in his purport of Bharat Maharaj, who in his first birth he was a king, and he practiced devotional service, he gave up his kingdom, and where did he go? Which forest? Which one? Pulaha Ashram. And then he became attracted and attached to what? What kind of an animal? You know? Mm-hmm. I'll give you a hint. It was not a monkey. He became attracted and attached to a little baby deer. A little baby deer. That was so cute, and it was helpless. And he was a warrior, and he wanted to protect it, this deer. So he became attached to it, and then he died in his attachment. And his next life, he became a deer. But he didn't lose his transcendental consciousness. And then he took his next birth as Jadavarat. Jada means dull, like a piece of wood, unconscious. So he acted as if he was unconscious, but he was very awake inside to his Krishna consciousness, but he did, outside he made believe that he was foolish and retarded, mentally challenged, as they say now, because he wanted everyone to leave him alone. He was so serious, he didn't want to get entangled in anything on the material level. He didn't want the slightest bit of entanglement, so he acted as if he was completely dull. And then it became revealed when he met Maharaj Rahugana, it became revealed that he was actually a great soul, a realized soul. So Prabhupada says in his purport, from the life of Jadavarat, from Bharat Maharaj, King Bharat, it is understood that transcendental endeavors or the practice of yoga never go in vain. By the grace of the Lord, the transcendentalist gets repeated opportunities for complete perfection in Krishna consciousness. And then, text 44, by virtue of the divine consciousness, purva abhyasena enaiva. So Krishna said that you can overcome difficulties of the mind by what? What were the two words that he said previously? Abhyas and vairagya. Practice and detachment. So purva abhyas means previous practices. Purva abhyas tenaiva. By those previous practices, riyate hi avaso apisa. He will, avasa means automatically. Riyate means he's attracted automatically by virtue of his purva abhyas. And gikyasur api yogasya, he's inquisitive about yoga. And shabda brahma ativartite, and he's above immediately the ritualistic parts of the shastra that tells you to do materialistic activities to perform activities for materialistic results. So he's above that immediately, because he's attracted to the essence of it. Yoga, the connection with the Supreme. So this is purva avyas. So this is what happens to someone. He takes his birth, he's attracted transcendentally, automatically, to make further progress. And by virtue, here's the translation, by virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yogic principles, even without seeking them. It's natural for him. Such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands always above the ritualistic principles of the scriptures, meaning karma kanda. And then 45. And then when that yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. Tato yati param gatim. He achieves the param gatim, the highest destination. So it may take aneka janma samsadas. Achieving perfection aneka janma after many, many births. Yoga samsudhir kilbisa. When the yogis, all sins kilbisa, all his contaminations are washed off. Prayatnad yata manastu, by his very strong practices. So he still has to engage strongly, but he's attracted to them. It's only difficult when you're not attracted and you still have to do it, then it's very difficult. But if you have an attraction, an attachment to doing sadhana, then it's very easy to do it. So here's the translation. When the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor and making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. So what is that supreme goal that he's going to attain? Verse 46, 47, these verses will explain a progression. A yogi is greater than the tapasi, the ascetic. Because we've heard about this, especially in the fourth chapter. So, a progression. Who's the best? Because the yogi will attain the supreme goal. He's greater than the jnani, greater than the empiricist, and greater than the karmi, the fruitive worker. Therefore, O Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. Those are the glorifications of yoga. So why is the yogi glorified above the impersonalist, the empiricist, the jnani, and the karmi, karmakandi? It's because one is interested in karma, elevation on the material level, so karmi, karmakanda, and then the jnani is interested in liberation and impersonal Brahman, and the yogi is interested in the supersoul, meditating on the supersoul. And then the final verse explains the topmost position in a very famous verse. Yoginam apisavisham madgitenam teratmanam sadavan vasate yomam samme yukta tamo mataha. Yoginam apisavisham, of all the yogis. So the yogi is better than the karmi, the jnani. The yogi is better. And the tapasi. Tapasi, what is a tapasi? Someone who performs austerities, not interested in the material world. But of all yogis, so the yogi is the topmost amongst them, but yoginam apisavisham, of all yogis, all kinds of yogis, madgitain antaratmanam. Antaratmanam means, anta means inside, atma. Within himself, madgitain, he's always thinking of me. His consciousness is always within, madgitain antaratmanam, thinking of me. And Shradhavan, with great faith, vajate yomam. He is serving me with great loving, serving and worshipping me with great loving devotion. While his consciousness is fully within, focused on me, same yukta tamo mataha. He is the greatest of yogis. He is considered mata. He is thought of as the greatest of yogis. One who is fully absorbed in worshiping Krishna. And actually, bhajate yomam, he's doing bhajan. He's worshiping me with great devotion. Serving me with great devotion. So here's the translation, and then we shall read Prabhupada's purport. Or some of it is quite a long purport. And of all yogis, because the yogi is better than the tapasi, the jnani, and the karmi, So Krishna says, be a yogi, and of all yogis, who is the best? The one who with great faith, sadavan bhajate yomam, with great faith always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me. He is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. Samayukta tamo mataha is considered by me, Krishna says, to be the highest of all. So he's thinking of Krishna, always in Krishna. He's always rendering devotional service to Krishna with great faith. He is the highest of transcendentalists, because he's the highest of yogis, and the yogi is higher than everyone else. And Krishna says, Samayukta tamo mataha. This is my opinion. So we've already heard that Krishna's opinion is the best opinion, the most authoritative. Why? Because he knows everything. So Prabhupada's purport says, the word bhajate is significant here. Bhajate has its root in the verb bhaj, which is used when there is need of service. The English word worship cannot be used in the same sentence as bhaj. Worship means to adore, to show respect and honor to the worthy one. But service with love and faith is especially meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can avoid worshipping a respectable man or a demigod and may be called discourteous, but one cannot avoid serving the Supreme Lord without being thoroughly condemned. Every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus every living entity is intended to serve the Supreme Lord by his own constitution, his own nature makes him serve the Lord. And failing to do this, he falls down. The culmination, Prabhupada continues, we won't read all the purport. The culmination of all kinds of yoga practice lies in bhakti yoga. All other yogas are but means, ways to come to the point of bhakti in bhakti yoga. Yoga actually means bhakti yoga. All other yogas are progressions towards the destination of bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma yoga without fruit of results is the beginning of this path. When karma yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, the stage is called jnana yoga. When jnana yoga increases in meditation on the super soul by different physical processes and the mind is on him, it is called astanga yoga. And when one surpasses the astanga yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, it's called bhakti yoga, the culmination. Factually, bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal. But to analyze bhakti yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. And then, skipping some of Prabhupada's purport. Next paragraph. It is by great fortune that one comes to Krishna consciousness on the path of bhakti yoga, to become well situated according to the Vedic direction. The ideal yogi concentrates his attention on Krishna, who is called Shyamasunda, who is as beautifully colored as a cloud, whose lotus-like face is as effulgent as the sun, whose dress is brilliant with jewels, and whose body is flower-garlanded. Illuminating all sides is his gorgeous luster, which is called the Brahma-jyoti. He incarnates in different forms, such as Ramana, Sringa, Varaha, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he descends like a human being as the son of Mother Yasoda, and he is known as Krishna, Govinda, and Vasudeva. He is the perfect child, husband, friend, and master, and he is full with all opulences and transcendental qualities. If one remains fully conscious of these features of the Lord, he is called the highest yogi. Okay, that's the end of the sixth chapter, basically. Any questions or comments? So there's a gradual path in yoga that begins, as Prabhupada explained, by following the Vedic system, Karmakanda system. Then one will come gradually to be detached from the results of one's work. And then one can practice yoga when one is detached. So karma, jnana, yoga, and then finally the highest of yogis is the bhakti yogi. So it's a long way to go. But one can start bhakti yoga if one understands the system. One can start it from the very beginning. And then one will go through the different processes in bhakti yoga and attain detachment, then detach work, full surrender, and then ultimately full meditation on Krishna. It's described here by the Tejo Mam, worshipping Krishna with great faith and devotion, serving him. Any other questions? Yes.
Which yoga that we are practicing now? Yeah. Which yoga we are practicing now in this time?
Now?
Yeah, Ashtanga or Bhakti.
We're practicing Bhakti Yoga, but on different levels. But we don't practice Ashtanga Yoga. I mean, not that devotees, of course, can do some yoga to gain some good health, but their practices of Bhakti Yoga. Because Bhakti Yoga consists of hearing and chanting about Krishna. That's what the essence of Bhakti Yoga is. Hearing, chanting, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Vishnam. So those processes, Navanga Bhakti, these are the essence of Bhakti Yoga. But one can practice Bhakti Yoga on different levels. Sometimes we're attached to material things. Well, the highest level of Bhakti Yoga is when one loves Krishna fully and has no attachment to anything but Krishna. So the more one becomes attached to Krishna, and the less one is attached to the material world, the more one is moving upward on the path of Bhakti Yoga. What do you think? Did that answer?
That's good.
Huh?
Bhakti Yoga.
You like that Bhakti Yoga?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to go to the forest and become a ascetic, tapasi, and a yogi?
Yeah, before I'm just thinking that. But I'm asking the devotee what happened there. It's very difficult. Yeah, it's difficult.
To do
hard
that?
Hard work, hard, very, austerity.
And it's especially, it's not only difficult, it's dangerous because you're thinking, oh, I'm performing austerities, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. And you're especially pulling the senses and mind back from any material engagement. But in Bhakti Yoga, we use our senses and mind. So the one who is just performing austerities, his austerity is basically not to use the senses and mind for material things, but to do that he withdraws them and doesn't use them at all. But the devotee, he uses his senses, he uses everything to please Krishna. So the position is safer because his senses are being engaged. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchite. Because when our senses are not being engaged, then they have a tendency to want something material to do. But if we keep always engaged in Krishna's service, then it's much more easy to stay peacefully absorbed and on the path. But But if we're not engaged, if we don't do anything for Krishna, then the mind and the senses will move towards material enjoyment. Or we're fully austere and moving back, and then the objects of the senses come before us, and then the mind becomes attached to them, attracted and attached. So the path of bhakti is more practical, and also the goal more practical. It's easier to perform, and the goal is also the highest of goals. Do you think?
The senses become more powerful when they're not indulged also. Not when you fast and the sharp day is better than you've been eating all day. So the person who is drawing the senses is very happy because the senses become very powerful by that.
Mm.
Temptation to enjoy them. Some respect to make it stronger.
Yeah. So Srila Prabhupada kept that as one of the main principles in the Krishna consciousness movement, that everyone should be engaged all the time. And that was the mood of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also.
You were talking about people who sort of got no faith in the process. No faith in Krishna.
Where is that?
At one point, you were going to people on different levels.
Today?
Yeah. You're saying some people they take up.
Yeah. Come from previous life.
Some people just can't work out at all.
They can't relate.
So how can those people be helped?
Well.
There seems to be a lot of them.
how does someone begin the path? What do we call that? Agyata Sukriti. So that means agyata with no knowledge, performing some devotional activity but without consciousness. So that's the Harinams, the book distribution to non-devotees, and the prasadam distribution, increase people's piety, people hearing the holy names, hearing about Krishna. That's how those three things are basic things.
Speed them up. Because that seems probably slow too, because people have been in the restaurant for years and they're hearing the kirtan from the speaker. They might like so much like the environment or something that doesn't really manifest in terms of much.
Well, then when they come in contact with a powerful, very devotionally powerful person, then that ignites the spark due to that, that's there already from their piety, devotional piety. So one thing that we can do, an interesting way to look at it, is the more advanced we become, the more we can help others. So that it's always good to bring it back to that point. Otherwise we start thinking, boy, are these foolish karmis and blah, 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 blah. And that doesn't really help either us or them. Rather, we should, the Prabhupada had the potency to touch so many people just by even a short contact with him. He was so deep in his Krishna consciousness, people were so touched immediately. And his books were so powerful like that too. So many people speak about how they were in a big room or something like that, and Prabhupada just like looked at them. They had never met him before, and then he put his glance upon them, and that was it. They felt like he was looking right through them, and he knew them. And all their nonsense and who they were and everything. is such a penetrating, powerful person. Empowered. Any other questions? Yeah.
From what we were reading there tonight, it's clear that it's very risky to maintain material desires while engaging in the practice of yoga has been discussed here, because Krishna is indicating that those desires will be rewarded. If they distract one from the path, then those desires will be rewarded.
Yeah. That's up a book, isn't there, is it? Yeah, there's yeah. Krishna may give us these things. But if he's really kind, he'll take them away. How do you say Tadanam Sanai? And that's why Maharaj Prakrit asked that question to Sukadeva Goswami near the end of the 10th canto, described in the 10th canto. He said, why is it that devotees of Lord Shiva get such facilities, and devotees of Krishna often undergo difficulties? So Maharaj Prakrit asked that question, and he perhaps was thinking of his forefathers, the Pandavas. They underwent so much difficulty.
Mm.
So much difficulty for so many years. Not just for 10 minutes. And the reply of Maharaj of Sukadeva Goswami was that when Krishna is pleased with someone, who'll give them so many material things, as Krishna is pleased with the unsuccessful yogi, like he was with Dhruva Maharaj. He was pleased with Dhruva Maharaj's determination to get something material, and he gave him something incredible material qualification, but it wasn't, but Dhruva was so embarrassed because he didn't want that anymore, because he was purified by seeing the Lord. So Krishna, that comes from Krishna's pleasure on someone, but Sukadeva continues to describe that when Krishna is really pleased, then Harisha Tadanam, he takes away.
Okay, so Krishna was coming to us that, like, I know I've got material desires, but I'm not wanting to pursue them.
Yeah.
I'm afflicted by them, but I'm not wanting to pursue them. But they remain an affliction. And then if I take them to the point of death, because they're present and they're there, am I going to be at some point given a path to pursue them?
There's a few points. One is that there's the mercy element.
Mm.
That if we hold on to the feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and humbly chant the holy name, I'm so fallen in life and in death, then those will be removed.
Mm.
And Krishna won't count that, so to speak.
Mm.
And also because those material desires that the devotee has, they're compared to the turning of the fan when the electricity has been turned off. They're not actually the real thing. They don't actually give further karma. They're just the parabdha karma, the karma of this particular body acting itself out. So it's not the same as the material desires of a non-devotee that actually give the result of more material desires, rather than the material desires of a devotee end up in eradicating material desires. So if one has them and humbly calls out to Krishna and let that humility dictate the mood of the chanting, then Krishna really hears that and purifies the heart. But we see also from the example of the great acharyas that there's no time when you feel, okay, now my material desires are removed and I have love for Krishna. I don't, you know, they don't never demonstrate that. They demonstrate, where is Krishna? I have no qualification. But I want Krishna. Krishna's service, even though I'm so unqualified. So that's the process of purification, when you see the material desires in you, and then the mood is nadanam, nadanam, nasandarim. I don't want these things. Kavitam va jagadisa kamani, but they're there in the heart, but I don't want them. Mama janmani, what do I want? I don't even want liberation. I want mama janmani, janmani, bhavatad bhakti, ahaituki. I want just to serve you. So to chant Krishna's names in that mood, where one is so deeply taking shelter of Krishna because of one's faulty condition, it's very powerful. Shelter is very deep, and the result of that is a deep taste comes by Krishna's mercy, and the taste is what overwhelms the material desires. Completely overpowers them. But if we just have the material desires and we don't take shelter of Krishna, then it can be a problem. Krishna will treat you as he likes, of course, but we have to take shelter of Krishna when confronted. So that's what to do at the time of death, for example. I don't want these things. I want you, Krishna. Mm. So the taste has to become, the desire has to be very sincere. Mm. Any other questions?
Does the jnanis, after reaching the Brahman stage, experience taste or happiness?
Yeah, so much happiness. But that happiness is compared by Śrīla Śrīdhāraswāmī to a drop. They compared to material happiness, their happiness is thousands and thousands of times more than material happiness. But compared to Krishna consciousness, or to even bhava, what to speak of prema, it's like a drop in the ocean. Yeah, there's so much happiness.
So they also experience some happiness.
Freedom from misery is happiness, as described in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu Nectar devotion. So much happiness to experience. So much better than the material. So the jnani is better than the karmi. How could you be detached from matter in this one is experiencing something superior? But when the resonance at Vrindavan, after Nanda Maharaj brought Krishna back from the kingdom of Varuna. Nanda Maharaj told the cowherd men that even Varuna, Krishna is so wonderful, even Varuna Dev was glorifying Krishna. So they concluded that actually Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then they thought that what is going, because we're associating with Krishna, what is going to be the result that we're going to get after we leave this world? So Krishna understood this, the desire that they wanted to know. They were thinking, oh, I'm going to get liberated. Oh, I'm going to go to Vaikuntha. So Krishna took them and he put them into the river Yamuna, Brahma Vidha, the place where Akura saw the saw Krishna in the form of Gopalakshya Vishnu. He put them in there and they lost all sense of identity. And that was also just where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu crossed the Yamuna River when he left Vrindavan. And they went into the Brahma Jyoti. They wanted to know. And then Krishna picked them up again. And then he brought them to be with him in the spiritual world, but in a special way, where all the demigods were there and worshipping Krishna, and Krishna felt shy in front of all the demigods worshipping him, even though he was there and the residents of Vrindavan were there. He felt shy. He had to accept their prayers. Lord Brahma was offering prayers, Lord Shiva was offering prayers. So they didn't like the Brahma Jyoti because there was no love of Krishna there. And then when they saw Krishna in this mood, that he was just accepting the prayers, they said, what kind of place is this? That I know that Krishna wants to run to us and hug us and jump on our laps, but he feels very shy in front of all the demigods to act like that. And we also want to run to him. But we also feel shy in front of the demigods. And if Mother Yasoda was in this place, how would she live? Because Krishna's there and she can't walk over and start putting food in his mouth. It would be torture for her. So they didn't like that place either. And then Krishna just brought them out into the best of all places. That's where they had started, when they were with Krishna in Vrindavan. The best of all places, where they could just love Krishna and feed him and joke with him and he'd sit on their laps. They would tease Krishna. So there's so much happiness, but because that happiness takes away one's relationship with Krishna, Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati said, Kaivalya Narakayate, it is like hell. I don't want it. It's suffering compared to Krishna. And the devotees prefer hell to that Brahma Sayuja. But yet there's so much more happiness than material life. Okay, we'll stop here.